guys, my college-age niece just graduated, and she moved in with Gloria and I. We're kind of helping her get started in L.A. as she builds a new life, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she's going to be living with us for a year. And the other day, we're washing dishes, and this is how, this is the kindness that I'd be repaid with. She goes, she described my fashion style as Costco New Balance shoes and a single-color polo. That was the fashion sense she described to her uncle. But it was the specificity of Costco New Balance shoes that just, like, that was the deepest plunge of a knife I've ever had.
Yeah, but to be fair, it's pretty accurate, right?
From my grave, I curse thee, Brad Geiger. That very specific, like, dad Costco New Balance that's white with the New Balance N on it. And you're just like, oh, it was very cutting. Anyway, so I am delighted. She is a delight to have living with me. But, oh, my
she's
gosh.
She's going to be living with you all year?
I'm gonna
listen to this podcast and then listen to you a year from now and just listen to the wrecked shell of a man you've become.
Or let's look at the positive thing. Maybe I will start upping my game fashion-wise.
That could happen.
We didn't think of that.
Well, I mean, you guys, you both know one thing that I am famous for, really, is just my high fashion game. Like, I roll into a place and people go, where did he get that shirt? Those pants are amazing.
Oh, I got so tired when I used to exhibit next to you at San Diego. Oh, Dave, who are you wearing? You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you who he's wearing. He's wearing me thin.
My response, Brad, was free in and out shirt. 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 Just whatever hand me down I got from some promo from a company.
your whole idea of updating your fashion wardrobe is whether you're able to catch the t-shirt out of the little t-shirt gun at a game.
Yeah, like, daddy's got new clothes. I caught the t-shirt cannon. Well, on that note, hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about t-shirt cannons and making comics.
And t-shirt cannons and making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett, his friend and cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, who is that melodious third voice we've got with us this week?
That is our dear friend Jake Parker of MrJakeParker.com, or more specifically for this month, of Inktober.com. Jake Parker, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
How have you been?
Doing good. Doing good. Busy and... I'm almost done. There's been a few days.
That has a very final note to it, Brad, doesn't it? Like, it's been a good run for Jake Parker.
Yeah, he sounds like he's a little bit in shock. Just to give us an idea of what you go through every October, how many emails are in your inbox right now? Give us the number.
Man, you just made me look at my inbox again.
You know, Jake, the questions just get harder from here on in. Yeah.
I like that he's so broken as a man right now, Brad. We're like, so Jake, what kind of shoes are you wearing? He just starts crying.
New Balance. No, I have about 200 emails unread.
Wow.
I've been trying to do inbox zero, the inbox zero method. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I sort of abandoned that after vacation this summer. On my to-do list this week is to clean out the inbox, sort everything into the file so that I know exactly what needs responded to and what doesn't. But
so now what kind of, are you getting questions, like people who are confused about how Inktober works? What's the most popular genre of request or question that you're getting in that 200?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions. Like, can I use, you know, can I use a Sharpie marker for Inktober? Can I use watercolors for Inktober? You know, can I use ballpoint pen for Inktober? Those types of things. Then there's also, do I have to do the prompts or can I come up with my own ideas? And then there's other things like where do I post? How do I post it? And then there's one guy that keeps emailing.
Jake, I got to pause you for a second because how dumb can people be on a base? Like, you,
oh my God.
You have made this so simple. It speaks to the human condition that they're like, Jake, all right, so I've got one sock on. Now what's next? Is it the other foot or do I do the shoe of the same foot before I go to the other foot? Or do I do both socks first and then both shoes first, Jake? I need some advice before I start Inktober.
It takes everything within me to reply with patience and kindness.
Well, do you have, I mean, it would help if you had, like, I've got something in Gmail that has, it's called canned responses, and I've got mm-hmm. like a certain number of things that come up quite frequently, and I just make a canned response for it, select it and fire it off. Do you do something like that? Or are you actually sitting down and going into the merits of a Sharpie marker for some of these people?
I am ignoring the dumbest of questions.
Well, that'll take care of about 183 right. of them right there.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it just depends on, for the most part, I'm not answering many of them. I'm answering the ones that really, like, kind of, you know, merit a response, like, oh, hey, just check the FAQ, you know, the frequently asked questions that you know, we've got to answer there. Or if it's super easy, you know, I'll just do a one word response. Like, you know, do I have to do the prompts? No, you know, done.
Yeah.
There's one guy that keeps emailing me his actual drawings for me to post them.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. I apologize.
Yeah, Dave. I meant to talk to you about that. You're getting on our nerves because I can't post to Sheldon and Jake can't post your stuff. At some point you're going to have to get this straight.
Brad, I just need to know if Jake likes the pretty flower that I drew.
Well, that'd been a lot nicer if you hadn't done them in a freaking Sharpie.
Well, so I guess, though, on some level, we've jumped the gun because there is still a percentage of people that are not familiar with your concept of Inktober. So do you want to take us through what the overall thing is first, and then we can talk about this email, the 200 emails that come as a result of it?
Yeah. So Inktober, the brief history of Inktober is that back in 2009, I was doing a lot of things, trying a lot of different things out. And that was like the age of blogs, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a blog, posting my artwork on a blog. And I remember there were several of my friends who were doing like fitness challenges. And at the same time, I had a friend who had this really cool Japanese inkbrush pen. And I had never seen one of those before. And I went to try it out. And I was like, wow, this is such a cool tool. I need to get better at using it. And the idea like struck me, what if I did like a fitness challenge, but for art? I did a 30-day ink drawing challenge where I would do a drawing a day. I announced it on my blog, said, hey, this is what I'm doing. It's Inktober. I'm going to do 31 ink drawings this month. And that first year, you know, I got a lot of you know, traffic coming to the blog, people, you know, checking it out, seeing what I'm doing. A couple other bigger blogs sort of reposted that or reblogged. Hey, check out what Jake Parker's doing. And that was it. Like, Inktober came and went. I collected the drawings in a book. I sold the book in my web shop. And the next year rolled around. I thought, you know what? It was so good last year. I should try it again. Let's do it again this year for 2010. And I kept doing it year after year after year. And what happened was every year, more and more people would start doing it along with me. And what became this challenge for myself became this challenge that I was sharing with others and sort of leading a community of artists to do it. Mm-hmm. And it really went into like hyperdrive when, social media became ubiquitous and everybody was getting on Twitter and everybody's getting on Facebook and Instagram, and hashtags became like something that people actually used and were aware of. There was like a year there where people didn't know what hashtag was. And what happened was people started surfing hashtags and looking at hashtags, and I created the Inktober hashtag. And that's what made all of these different people doing Inktober are able to see each other's work and see what they're doing. And year after year, just kind of doubled in size as far as participation. So Here we are, at the time of this recording, we're 2 days into Inktober and there's over 300,000 Inktober posts on Instagram now.
Wow. That's amazing. And you've trademarked Inktober at this point, correct?
Yep. Yep, I trademarked it.
And the only place to get the official prompts for Inktober is at inktober.com, which is what you run. And I want to just tell our readers, be very careful. There's a lot of people posting Inktober prompts, unofficial ones. And one of the main reasons to participate in this is to get into the zeitgeist, to get into flow, to post the official hashtag, and to kind of get your work in that group that you know a lot of people are going to be looking at. If you're drawing unofficial prompts and you're going to look like you're out of step with everybody else, be very careful. I mean, we used to say back in the day, accept no imitations. And this is the case where you really want to accept no imitations. Don't fall for one of these other people calling themselves Inktober. Do the real one, right?
I disagree.
Jake, I just tried to help you. Here I am saying, Jake, you're the one. You're the only one. Tell me why you would send people, Jake, to people who are calling themselves Inktober, but they're not. You've gone through the trouble of trademarking Inktober.
Right, right.
Now, you're making me crazy already.
No, I think the differentiation is not the trademarking. It's the inspirational thing. Is that right, Jake? That's what you're taking.
I don't take any issue with anybody creating their own prompt list and inviting everybody is like a part of a bigger community, but then there's smaller communities and there's like fan bases around individual artists. And I don't mind if they make their own prompt list and say, this year I'm doing witches for Inktober, or this year I'm doing plants for Inktober. And here's my prompt list. I just want people participating in Inktober, doing the daily drawing, getting better at their craft, and just being a part of the larger art community. And I agree with you in that if you participate in the official Inktober prompts, you're going to be a part of a larger community, and you're going to be able to see what, you know, all these different artists are doing, how they're interpreting these different prompts and getting inspiration and getting ideas and things like that. But, you know, if you want to do Inktober and just do a random drawing a day that's not associated with anything, like that's still fine too. Mm-hmm. I think the main part is just hashtagging it that you're participating in Inktober so that other people could see the work that you're doing.
So for me, then, the Inktober project that I'm undertaking, which is 31 Days of Brad Geiger Nude, that's okay. That's within the realm of what's acceptable.
Dave, that's a different hashtag. That's Kinktober. That's a completely different. Man. That's run by my friends over at Filthy Figments, and it actually is a thing. But,
you want to hashtag that
completely different.
So, Jake, let me step back like a bird's eye thing, because you are an instructor. You're a person that's taught both corporately, educationally, and personally. I wanted to ask you, what does it say about the human condition that delightful constructs like this, like Inktober or 24-Hour Comics Day or Draw a Comic Every Hour, why do you think those trigger so happily with a percentage of the art and art-loving populace?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's like different elements at play here, because number one, like, you need a framework and you need structure in order to, I think, challenge yourself. Like, that each one of these challenges give you a goal, give you something to work towards.
Right.
So I think there's a draw to that right there. Is just, I have a framework in which I can do this thing and I know there's an ending to it. I know there's like a final goal. What's also cool about each of these challenges is there's a larger goal. There's like this overall large goal that you're going towards, which is daunting. And, you know, you think about 31 drawings looking, you know, staring back at you, these blank pages, and that's like hard. But then there's also this daily, like the smaller goal that you hit each day, and that's all I got to do is a drawing a day.
Right.
And what that does is it rewards you daily, and then at the end you have this overall reward of look what I accomplished looking back at this. And I think that works for 24-hour comic day, where you do a comic every hour, or a page every hour, whatever it is, however you do it. And then these other monthly drawing challenges, Mermaid and Dino-vember and March of Robots, and I don't know, there's hundreds of them now.
Wait, what? Those are all things?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, I was thinking about how lucky we are that you got this idea for the kind of athlete, or not the, your friends were doing physical fitness challenges and you decided I'm going to do an ink challenge. Thank God you decided to do that towards the end of September and it became Inktober, and that we didn't end up with like Inkruary or something really awkward.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked at all.
But
Inkruary.
One of the things that's interesting to ask you, because you straddle more heavily towards the illustrator tradition than Brad and I, who straddle more towards the comic strip tradition, although all three of us have stories and comics, obviously, that we've done. But do you think a part of it is so many illustrators and artists, more broadly speaking, come out of art school or come out of a project where they are given prompts and then find that they don't have a project or don't have a structure to work in. So they have all this skill set, but no impetus to put it to work. You know, like Brad wakes up tomorrow morning and he goes, I've got an Evil Link to draw. You wake up tomorrow morning and you go, I have a Skyheart to draw. I wake up and I go, I have a Drive to draw. But if you have the skill set, but don't have the prompts, I think that something like an Inktober can be so valuable for the average artist.
I think that's that's a really good way to look at it. Yeah.
And I often wonder, how do a lot of your illustrator friends, or even you, when you don't have a project per se, how do you keep yourself going?
Yeah, that's a good question. When you don't have a project, for me, I fabricate projects out of thin air. Like Inktober was that. Like, I could have just said, I got to get better at this pen. But, I set up this challenge for myself to motivate me. Number one, it was like, by publicly stating, I'm going to do this for 31 days, now I'm accountable. And that's sort of what my philosophy there is, that creativity is constraints and accountability are like flint and steel. And you can't have, the two don't really work by themselves, but once you put them together, then you can get creative, because number one, you need constraints. It's the old saying, if you have too much rope, you'll hang yourself, right? So you work within those constraints, and that pushes you to solve problems. And then the accountability part is you have people, for me, it's like if you announce it, you have people who are expecting, you to deliver. And the accountability part could be to a fan base. It could just be to a friend, could be to, a spouse. It could be to an editor, whatever it is. But the accountability part is, I think, what makes it so that, you hit a deadline.
Right.
And
right.
You accomplish the thing you're setting out to do.
Well, Brad, I actually don't know this about you. Have you ever done like a 24-hour comics day or an hourly comics day?
No, I don't. I really haven't. And I've traditionally taken kind of a sour view on that, if only because I'm kind of like, I'm already doing, I'm kind of operating at my top level. Cynically, I don't think that and I have been proven wrong on this maybe once or twice, but for the most part, a comic that's done in 24 hours, where you do one page every hour, inevitably those last several pages are going to get worse and worse and worse. And then my thought is, well, why do that? Why not just do a nice comic and take the time it takes you? But I realize that I'm an old grumpy curmudgeon when it comes to that.
Yeah, I think Jake and I would agree with that. That's true. I will say this. I have done 24-hour comics day, I think twice, maybe three times now in my life. And I've done a modified version of it where, for me, it made sense. I basically just worked really far ahead to build up my buffer during that 24 hours. So I would kiss my wife. I would hug my kids. I would say, hey, thank you all for taking care of each other for 20 hours. Daddy's going to cocoon in the studio with a couple other artists and eat pizza and draw for 24 hours straight. And I would get, you know, a week's worth of work done in one day and then sleep for 10 hours that night, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And that I found that to be helpful. Because as you were intimating, Brad, and I actually see your point, when you're already a working professional, you need Jake's ideas of constraints less because you already have professional constraints. You know what you need to do to produce for this month, and you already have the accountability and the constraints, you know?
Yeah.
So, to Jake's point, I think a lot of people who are project-less or between projects, this combination of constraints and accountability is really helpful.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you. And I don't, you know, I don't poo-poo either one of them. But of the two 24-hour comics day in Inktober, I lean a little bit towards Inktober just because I'm also worried in a 24-hour period of time, if you're pushing yourself to do that, you could really, and I know this sounds dumb, you could really injure yourself. You could do some damage to your wrist when you're pushing yourself that much further.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Than what you should be doing. So of the two, I think Inktober has, and I'm not saying either one of them are bad, but I think of the two, I think Inktober has a little bit more merit.
Yeah, and Inktober has the benefit because I think, Jake, you were mirroring health things. It has that benefit that, you know, they always say like a diet or a health change, if you can do it for 30 days, then you've made a real concrete step towards changing your patterns. Mm-hmm. And if Jake can get, or not Jake, if Inktober can get somebody drawing again or drawing with renewed vigor for 30 days, they're very likely to go the next 30 days at least producing 15 or 20 drawings in that next 30 days, you know?
How many people have gotten, I know this has happened because I see it on social media. How many people, Jake, have gotten in touch with you and said, hey, I liked Inktober so much, I'm doing Inkvember now?
Yeah, here's the thing that I'll hear a lot from people is that Inktober unlocked like creativity for them. Like prior to that, they were creatively stifled. And now they've gotten into this groove and they've started drawing again, whether it's, you know, they abandoned it, you know, sometime after college and now they're drawing again, or sometimes it's people who are professionals who do draw every day, but they haven't drawn something for themselves, you know, in the last 10 years. And Inktober gave them an excuse to do that. And so the things that I hear back is like, thank you so much for this challenge. It had such a positive impact on creativity in my life that now I'm in this whole, you know, this new plane of like creative existence where I'm drawing every day or I'm thinking more creatively and I'm applying everything that I've learned, you know, in Inktober to what I'm doing now. The other thing too, it's like if you post every day for 30 days, the algorithms love that. And so people always come back and say, I got all these new followers. I got all these new comments. You know, after doing Inktober, like I just got this huge boost on my social media presence. So there's that thing as well. There's no reason not to do it, guys.
So now, Jake, where is Inktober going next? I mean, you put out the book. You've got this huge presence. What can we look for out of Inktober in the future?
So right now I'm actually working on the Inktober handbook, and it's being published by Chronicle. Just got notes back from my editor.
Oh, I love their logo, by the way. I know that's totally dumb, but I think Chronicle has one of the best logos in books. Go ahead, keep going.
The eyeglasses.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's so cute. Go ahead, keep going.
Yeah. So the Inktober handbook is basically a guide to doing inking, to drawing, to doing the challenge.
Oh, you have saved yourself so many future emails.
And the idea too is that Inktober doesn't have to be bound to the month of Inktober. If you pick up the book in February, you should be able to sit down and do 31 days of drawing if you want, you know?
Right.
So there's that. Well, I'll tell you how it's evolved also. So for me, it initially was like, I want to get better at inking with this particular kind of pen, right? Up until that point, I was just using technical pens, and the brush pen was like this unwieldy tool that I had to like, you know, rein in and figure out how to use. Last year, there was a big hullabaloo, I guess we'll call it that, about digital versus ink. And that's always been sort of this thing lately. It's like, what counts as Inktober? And for the most part, like I've emphasized, you need to be drawing with traditional ink. But myself as an artist, like I've inked digitally before, and I work digitally all the time. And I heard a lot of concerns about digital artists, and it made me really, like, this last year, think a lot about what is digital inking and does it have a place in Inktober? And ultimately, I landed on, I sat down and really tried to do some digital inking myself and saw the pros to digital inking and the cons to the, you know, what's hard about it as well. Even though you've got like the control Z, like it is harder to make, for me, beautiful lines like I do with the traditional pen. So this year there's this idea that the line work, whether you're making it with a physical pen or you're making it with a digital stylus, I feel like it's counts as an Inktober drawing, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect too. And the other thing I was thinking too, it's like, were the guys drawing with feathers like super upset that these other guys showed up with like crow quills, like these metal tip things, and saying, well, you know, that doesn't count as inking.
I needs to come out of a bird.
I say, this son of a bitch has got a metal quill.
You can call it crow quill, but there's no crows with quills like that. Yeah.
You're fooling no one, Gerald, with your metal quill.
So, I mean, it's an evolution, right? And then came ballpoint pens and markers and technical pens and brush pens. And styluses, right? Yeah. So, the form, the medium is evolving. So why can't Inktober evolve with it?
Yeah, I think, but to me, as much as I like the focus on ink, because I think so many people haven't tried or mastered ink, I think that's great.
Yeah.
But I think broadly speaking, maybe Brad would agree with this, that the spirit of so many of these creative comics events, like 24-Hour Comics Day or Hourly Comics or Inktober, is basically there's just a huge portion of the populace that is not drawing. They have the ability to draw and they are not drawing. Mm-hmm. So if you can get them drawing, that is the great goal, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if they want to fudge the edges of it, that's fine as long as they're drawing, you know?
I agree.
That really is what it came down to for me. It's like everybody has picked up a drawing utensil in their life. You know, we used to, like, it was naturally, it's like breathing, eating, drawing as a little kid, right? They love that stuff. And at some point, people just abandon it.
Yep.
And there's a quote somewhere, I forget who says it, but artists are just the people who haven't abandoned drawing. Like, they're the people who stuck with it.
Right.
And so it's like, it is a part, I think, of human, like, DNA. Like, drawing is 30,000 years old. There's these beautiful cave drawings that rival anything that we can create today as far as beauty and technique, you know? So it's like something that's a part of us. It's a way we could communicate. And if this challenge helps people like rediscover that inside them, and maybe they're not comfortable with a brush pen, but they want to use a Bic ballpoint pen, then draw with a Bic ballpoint pen. The point is to create a drawing every day and to tap into that creativity.
Well, we don't need to monopolize all your time on Inktober, but I want to say one last thing, which is I am struck every time we talk about Inktober, how many people psychologically need to give themselves permission to draw. And part of what this is for so many people, and part of the emails that you get saying, hey, can I use a Sharpie, or hey, can I do it on watercolor? Or, hey, they're basically just seeking permission that they should be able to give themselves, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really surprising to me. And I've been getting that for years. You know, every year the same questions pop up, and I do my best to put the information out there to kind of curtail those things. But yeah, people need, you know, I'll give you permission.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you could do it.
Well, you basically have given people permission. You have 31 days to draw whatever you like. And if you want them, here are these prompts. And if you want to use ink, yes, it's ink. And if you want to do 30 days, yes, that's fine. It's just interesting. Like, Brad, as a professional, or I as a professional, you as a professional, no, you have permission to draw whatever the heck you want. But so many people, they're like, no, I am an accountant. I am not allowed to draw. I do not have permission. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you control your own life. You have permission to become an artist at any point you want. And it's sort of fascinating for me on that point. I just sort of trailed off there at the end.
You don't smell burning toes, do you?
I know, exactly.
So, Dave, let's switch gears here for a second, because I've got another topic that I really want to talk about, and that is congratulations on Holy cats, $116,500 in the final count of Drive Kickstarter?
Oh, yeah, I'm really thankful. People were very kind to that Kickstarter, and so I'm really grateful. Drive, for whatever reason, has just developed a very nice readership, and so I'm really lucky and happy with that one. And I'm also exhausted. Yeah. You guys know this. It's exhausting to do a Kickstarter.
Yes, it really is. I get Kickstarter hangover, where the morning after a Kickstarter wraps up, I wake up and I look at that screen and I say to myself, I promised what? Oh my God. Now I got to do all that stuff I was talking about. It's so fun to run the campaign, but man, the day after it's like, oh no.
Well, Brad, you promised to produce a book that you had already drawn. Jake promised to produce a book that he hadn't drawn yet. That's a worse hangover. Yeah. He was like, oh no, what have I done?
It was, yes. That, I mean, when I said, I'm almost done at the beginning of this podcast. That's what I was talking about. It's like we just shipped out 2,500 books because I also did a pre-order after the books came or when the books were coming in, just so I could like sell some books on top of the Kickstarter as well.
Sure. Yeah.
So all those books were getting like, I was figuring out the postage. I didn't do a fulfillment center. It was just like one thing after another. Like I looked at a fulfillment center. They're all great. Here's what we could do for you. And then I realized I promised that I would sign all the books. So I couldn't like afford to ship them to me, sign them, pack them up and ship them to the fulfillment center. So I was like stuck having to ship them. And so it was like signing all the books, figuring out the postage for all the books, packing all the books, just logistically all of that was happening while prepping for Inktober and getting all this like stuff ready and delivering a children's book that I had to do. And it's like, really, I just, you know, as soon as Inktober's over, I am just going to take a break and like look out the window for a little bit.
Well, that's how I feel at the end of this Kickstarter, is that I kind of, like Brad said, there are like two or three links that you check every day during a Kickstarter. You check your mm-hmm. Kickstarter, mm-hmm. you maybe check your Kickstarter dashboard, you check KickTrack, which has a slightly mm-hmm. different set of metrics. And then you're checking all your social media feeds for different input and feedback. And there's a bunch of messages and emails that come in. And then all of a sudden, everything kind of goes quiet.
Yeah.
And it's weird in a way, too, because it's like you've just run 100 yards and scored a touchdown. And then you don't have to move anymore, but you're just standing still because you've just put out so much effort.
Yeah.
So it's weird mm-hmm. to come to the end of a Kickstarter. But anyway, this one, to answer your question, though, Brad, this one was a fun one because we were able to unlock a lot of stretch goals. But my big learning from this one was to not blow through stretch goals too fast, too early, because midway and later in the Kickstarter, you will regret when you don't have as many Kickstarter stretch goals to unlock, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you unlock all the sweet, sweet stuff right up front and then people are like, all right, well, what else are we shooting for? And you're like, what if I juggled some eggs? What if that was one of the stretch goals? What if I also, and I had planned out this Kickstarter pretty well, but I got too excited with how fast it was going at first and I unlocked too many stretch goals. And I guess I should back up and explain. One of the reasons why my stretch goals could be unlocked early is because I intentionally keep them varied in terms of price.
Mm-hmm.
I don't set them in stone until I unlock the one right before it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So if, for example, I have a day where I blow through $10,000 that day, I don't want to have preset that every stretch goal is $2,500, because what will that gain me? It would have gone through $10,000 anyway. There's mm-hmm. no reason to give it that extra push. So mm-hmm. I'll unlock a goal at like $10,000. There's the stretch goal. And then if it's still going fast, maybe I will adjust the next stretch goal and that'll be $15,000, or the next stretch goal will be $17,000, or the next stretch goal will be $12,000 if it's slowed down. And that way it varies and based on what the Kickstarter needs.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so when you're listing stretch goals, it doesn't say the number. Is that what you're saying? It
exactly. Just says, and in fact, Jake, I don't even list them further. I keep them sort of blacked out, like you mm-hmm. unlock them in a video game, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
And so that way there's both a little bit of mystery and also I can, it's like a dancer dancing with a partner. You adjust your steps and you adjust your speed based on how fast or slow the Kickstarter is doing and what the mood of the room is, mm-hmm. you know?
I got to say, your Kickstarter, watching it, it's like watching a masterclass in how to run a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Like from the video to the launch to just the dead middle where you're still hyping it and you're still like, you've got activity around it. I was just taking notes the whole time. It was impressive.
Oh, well, thank you. I got to tell you, there's nothing worse than the middle of a Kickstarter where there's not a lot of activity and you're still over there going, hey, everybody, come on down. You know, you feel like it's the most carnival barkery you get, you know, is that 2-week middle period where nothing is really happening.
Yeah, you got to give them a reason to talk about things. One thing I liked, too, that you did was you had I don't know if it was just one of these or a couple of them, but the stretch goal was 20 Lego creations.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like that really speaks to the community because it's not about raising money. You know, we're not getting to this next level. It's about building the community more. And I just love that kind of stuff. I thought that was great.
Right. For me, that serves a lot of goals. There's a couple ones. There's one, I didn't do it this time, but there's also a coloring page that if 20 people do color in a coloring page. And I always say, like, you can have your kids do it if you want. Mm-hmm. And then we do Legos and then we do cosplay. And there was another game goal that we did once.
The cosplay one was cool.
But what's fun about that is it brings out the super fans, which is lovely. And then it also, it puts a focus that's not monetary, like you said. So people can really focus on the joy of the comic and not so much like, oh, Dave's a money grubber kind of thing, which is not the point. And then also it gives you, like you said, something different to talk about so that you don't constantly have to go dollar sign, dollar sign, dollar sign. You can say, look at this creativity and joy around the comic, you know?
Right. Yeah. The other thing that I've done is just process and like concept art, which is another thing to show. Like now I'm breaking down all the 20 drawings that led up to the design for this character. And that gets you another thing to share about, you know, something that isn't related to getting money for the Kickstarter, but more about the creation of this project and that you are, you know, actively making this thing.
That's great. That's a great point. And that's something that I didn't do. I know I did do one or two posts, but you did that really well with your Skyheart one. And by the way, these are all archived. So if you're thinking about doing a Kickstarter out there, it is worth going through Brad's archived Kickstarters and Jake's archived Kickstarters and mine and others. Frankly, learn from the people that had really hit a chord. Like Ryan North does a great job with his Kickstarters every time, building a sense of, hey, we're all in this together and aren't we having fun? And what a great community moment this is.
Yes.
And from Ryan, it's genuine. It is really genuine. And if you can summon that, it's a powerful thing to mobilize your audience with. But to get back to that center idea, though, I got a little too excited at first and unlocked too many stretch goals. But at the same time, it all worked out fine in the end. You know, it was did I go through them a little too quick at first? Yes, I did. But then I figured out some other ones that I could add on in the end. And one of them, you guys will appreciate this. One of them is to digitize an ebook and put into ebook my college comics that no one's ever seen really because there's only 5 copies left in the world.
Yeah.
And some readers were super excited about that. Yeah. It was funny to see how excited they were to see those.
What a great idea.
I thought that was cool. When you had the stretch goal for the digital rewards, I thought, A, it was brilliant that you saved that for the end. And B, like, that adds nothing to your shipping costs. Mm-hmm. It's basically just a download link. It's like the perfect, like, final add-on stretch type of thing. So...
yeah,
good job.
Brad and I should talk about this because, Brad, do you remember when I called you about that and what we talked about?
Yeah, that's exactly what we were trying to get, was something that would be exactly what you said, Jake. No new cost and it would kind of thread the needle. And plus it's something that people can get excited about. Here's something that you can't see. You can't find it anywhere else. It's truthfully an exclusive PDF that no one else sees. So it was perfect to cap this thing off.
Yeah. As Brad and I talked about it, Jake, one of the things that I think Brad crystallized for me is he goes, look, if you put any ebook up, the money that you will make there is in the thousands. But if you set a stretch goal that's in the tens and 20s thousands up and say that you'll get the ebooks for this, you're basically you're losing thousands to make tens of thousands. And I was like, all right, that's a great point, you know?
Yeah, that was my idea, wasn't it? I forgot to take credit for that.
I'm giving you credit, Bradley J. I'm giving you credit.
I forgot about that. Yes, that was smart of me. I had a rare moment of lucidity.
Well, and I think Jake Brad even followed up by saying, like, you may find that once the ebooks get out there, and if people have gotten one or two of the ebooks, they'll be like, oh, I like this process. I would like to have more of Dave's ebooks, mm-hmm. and so other people will be getting them. So,
well, and didn't I text you a few months ago asking why you don't sell ebooks?
You did. And do you know that very week we started digitizing and ebookizing, that's not a word, but putting into ebooks my books. And now all my Sheldon books are on the store thanks to Jake Parker.
Good for you.
I just feel like you're leaving money on the table when you don't offer a download option. Because there's people who don't want a physical copy. They may not have room for it. And then there's people who don't want to pay for shipping.
Yeah. Can I tell you, there's one phrase in the English language that sounds like it's used in both business school and by the mob, and that's the phrase leaving money on the table. Because you can just imagine, like, Tony in the back room going, I just feel like we're leaving money on the table here, boys. We're leaving money on the table.
And we're meanwhile, at the Wharton School of Business, there's a guy in a tweed jacket and a goatee saying exactly the same thing in a different accent.
I just feel like we're losing money on the leaving money on the table, gents. I just feel as though we're leaving money on the table. But Jake was right. I was leaving money on the table because it's so easy to download. It's so easy to purchase. Once you create it, it is literally not even a thought. You're not involved in the process. The store takes care of everything. So
yeah,
Jake was right. I was wrong to not have ebooks. But before we move past this process, Brad, what is one thing that you did right in your last Kickstarter and one thing you did wrong in your last Kickstarter?
That's a good question. Okay, I've got one on both of them. The thing I did right, absolutely without a doubt, was opening it up early and making exclusive Kickstarter levels available for my Patreon backers so that they could jump in early. Something we talked about before in the show.
And Brad, where did you get that idea from?
All right, you're going to make me say it. That was Dave's idea.
I need this. I need it.
Right, now ahead, we're even. Going. Now we're
yeah,
even.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but I blatantly stole that idea from you happily, and I really did work well. I loved it, and I love anything that I can do for my Patreon backers that gives them that value add type of idea. You know, it's like you promise one thing and then you over deliver like crazy. And I really think that's a big part of success in crowdfunding in general, but on Patreon specifically. And the thing that I did wrong, and I even gave myself like an extra month, I did not accommodate the correct amount of time. Technically, I'm a little late getting these books out. And it's because, you know, there's always something. There's always a delay. And one delay early in the process exponentially affects that final deadline. So the good news is I'm taking, as long as there's no more surprises, knock on wood, I'm taking ownership of the shipment on the 10th of this month. And we'll begin shipping things out immediately thereafter. But yeah, that's one thing I do have problems with, and that is estimating the correct delivery day.
Okay, yeah, those are two really good ones. Jake, what would be the best and the worst aspects of your last Kickstarter? What did you do right, and what did you do wrong, do you think?
I was thinking what I did right was the month preceding the launch of the Kickstarter, the 2 months, is I was posting almost daily artwork related to the Kickstarter and just talking about this Kickstarter's coming, so that when it dropped, everybody knew about it. They knew it was coming. They knew, that I was planning on this, and they knew when I was launching it, so that those first few days, there was just a lot of excitement, a lot of activity happening on the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. What I did wrong? Do we got another hour? Is that
delightful.
No, I think one of the things, looking back, like I would have loved to have used a fulfillment center just to have that whole headache off of my plate. But looking back at it, like having the book signed maybe didn't mean as much to the people buying the books as it did to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe that was something I thrust upon myself thinking, well, no one's going to buy a book that isn't signed, you know, a Kickstarter book, because I'd done that in the past. And I try to like personalize, you know, people want something personalized, right? But maybe that wouldn't have made it, like, was there anybody who bought a book that wouldn't have bought it if they found out it wasn't signed? I don't think so. You know,
I would disagree with you a little bit. I think that what it did is in the moment, it probably generated just a tiny bit of more excitement, and you can't maybe quantify it, but I think it's real. Mm-hmm. I do think it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is it worth it?
Maybe not. But I would suggest this as a friend, that the next time you do it, maybe do it as a book plate, a signed book plate, rather than a signed book, as that will honestly shave a few hours off of the whole process.
Yeah. And then, those book plates, is that something that is like attached to the book, or is it something that just slid into the book?
It's usually like a 3-inch by 4-inch, something like that, piece of paper that has a self-adhesive stick on the back. So you peel the paper and stick it on. And what's great is you could have had your Skyheart books shipped to the fulfillment center, and then you have the book plates shipped to you. You sign all, whatever it was, 2,500 book plates. Mm-hmm. And then you send those to the fulfillment center for just a couple dozen bucks. And they do the shipping for you. And what happens is it's pick and pack. They grab a book, they grab a book plate, they put them in the package, off it goes. They grab a book, they grab a book plate, they put it in a package, off it goes. And then the reader takes the signed book plate and sticks it inside their book, usually in a special spot that you've designed for the end papers or the inside cover, something like that.
So yeah, basically, Jake, here's how you could have made your life so much
easier. No, I'm not in any way saying that in a critical way. I mean, part of what I was actually struck by Brad's moment by Brad and my back and forth about, this was my idea, well, that was my idea, because all three of us have seen as artists that it's not a zero sum game. There's no way that I lose by helping you in your career, and Brad loses by helping me in mine, and vice versa.
No, you're right.
So we're all three of us, and frankly, the broader community are all. It's when we're at our best, when we're sharing our best practices, and I think book plates are really, they're easier on your hand. They're easier on the spine of the book, because a person gets an uncracked book when they receive it. And then, frankly, some readers choose to put it in different places than you would expect. I've been at Comic Cons, and they're like, "Hey, would you sign this book that you had already book plated?" And I'm like, "You put the book plate there?" And they're like, "Yeah, I like it there." And it's like, "Okay, well, that's fine, I guess."
Page 34?
Yeah, you covered my artwork with it? That seems like a jerk move.
Well, listen. Speaking of fulfillment, and speaking of idea sharing, Dave, we haven't announced this. I successfully brought you over to the dark side. You're using BackerKit.
Oh, God, Brad, I haven't talked about this at all.
I'm so excited.
I'll give a much bigger summary when I'm all said and done. But yes, Brad convinced me to try BackerKit, because I don't know, Jake, if you heard the episode where I was poo-pooing BackerKit as feeling like it was, I don't know, I gave a bunch of reasons, but Brad gave me a bunch of counterpoints about why all the people that missed the Kickstarter, or why the people that would like to pre-order, why there should be something like BackerKit. So I am giving it a try this time with Drive, and I will do a bigger, broader summary when I'm done, Brad, if that's cool with you.
Oh,
but so far, I like it. There's a lot of data entry at first that we expected. It's like setting up a Shopify store or a cart, you know, that kind of thing. But I think when it's done, it will have been worth it. So yeah. I will check in with you later on. Yeah.
In the meanwhile, just before we close this topic off, how nice is it when you got all those emails after the Kickstarter ended of people who saying, "I'm just finding out about the Kickstarter today. How can I participate?" You just say, "Well, wait one day, and you'll see that red button on drivekickstarter.com, and you can pre-order the book."
This goes back to the basic human condition, Brad, about emails that frustrate you. There's nothing worse, and both of you know this, than you've been shouting from the rooftops for 30 days from every social media, and then the one person that goes, "Oh, I heard about it. I just didn't take action. Am I too late?" And you're like, "I will murder you through this computer."
Yeah, that's if for nothing else, BackerKit is great for that, because you can say, yeah, guess what? There it is. Now go buy it.
So I will give you an update on a future show on how I ended up with BackerKit, but so far so good. So thank you for the pro tip on that, Brad. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
But now I've got a question for both of you, and this is just a pure art question that I think would be fun for all three of us to tackle. And in kindness to our guests, I'll direct it to Jake first. So, Jake, on average, how far do you take a pencil sketch before you ink that sketch?
So I've evolved over the years where it used to be super tight. It used to be that there was a rough sketch, then a tight sketch, then like a black pencil tight drawing over it, then an inking over that. And at some point, I just got so tired of drawing the same thing like over and over that I started really keeping it loose to the point where if it's subject matter that I'm pretty familiar with, you know, character design that I've done several times, or if I know that, you know, I'm comfortable drawing this bit of technical, you know, information that I can just riff on it, then I won't get very tight at all. If it's something that I'm not too sure, I'm worried I'm going to mess up, I'll tighten it a little bit more. But for the most part, I really like a lot of the drawing happening during the inking stage. But that's not something I've always been able to do. It's maybe a recent, in the last 10 years, type of ability that I've been able to nail down.
Now, I think it comes down to confidence, doesn't it? Because my answer is going to be very, very similar. And I think what happened is I drawing the same characters over and over, and just be drawing faces, for example, over and over, and drawing bodies over and over. Pretty soon, your hand and your brain starts to say, "Okay, I get it. I it's making sense now." Where that certainly wasn't the case when I started out. I was struggling. I was solving these problems, and it comes down to confidence. And now when I'm doing my pencils, I will stay much, much more loose because, you know, I'll draw the circle, and you know, you always kind of grid off the middle of the skull and the eye line and the mouth line and all this other stuff. And I can do very, very little now when it comes to those markings. And I know that I know what I'm going to do when it comes to the inking, where before I don't think I could have said that. And it just comes down to confidence. For the people listening, if that's not you yet, that means you're perfectly normal. And you know, I used to get so frustrated exactly. when I would watch somebody draw, you know, and we've all seen those people that can draw without any sketches at all. They just blurp and it's there perfect on the page. And they're these people that I knew the artist for Crankshaft. I knew acquaintance wise, Chuck Ayers, and he was, and I said, "How do you do?" Because he was one of these guys. And I go, "How do you do that?" He says, I see the image on the page and I trace it.
Oh, and I'm wow.
Like, and I'm like, "Yeah, but there's nothing there. You realize there's nothing there." And he says, no, but I visualize it. I tried to trip him up. I wanted to ruin the guy. I was so jealous. I said, there's nothing there. He says, no, I visualize it. I see it on the page and I trace what I'm visualizing. And there are people like that. That ain't never going to be me.
Well, Brad, no. Hold on. I love you like a friend, so I'm going to pause you and say that is you. You don't realize you're doing it, but I've seen you draw, and your hand does the dance that all of our hands do, where it dances over the page about a third of an inch over the page. Yeah. Jake, you know what I'm talking about, where a hand does the drawing in the air before it draws it? Brad, you do that. You have that ability to project what you're seeing in your mind on the page, and that's... You are a far better artist than you are giving yourself credit for, because I've seen you do that dance where you're tracing it in air.
You're very kind, but I will say this. I will say this to the people listening at home. If you don't feel like that's you yet, stick with it. It's going to come. It's going to develop.
No, that is true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't get frustrated like I was sitting next to Chuck Ayers watching him do this because, you know, Chuck at that point had been drawing for maybe 20 years at that point. You know, it's something everybody is going to develop in their own way at their own time.
Well, I will never tire of telling the story, but when Bill Watterson sent me the stripped watercolor that he did for the poster, I was amazed to see his pencil marks under his ink because it speaks to a true master in that he never erased. So I had to go in and take that out digitally, but it doesn't matter because it gets to the point here, which is he had maybe 6 pencil marks on the page to indicate mainly outer edges, but also a few energy lines. And that was his sketch. And then everything else was in ink form and watercolor. And it was amazing to see how confident he was that, like, he just needed to get down a few lines to give him a range, a parameter of where certain things would go. And then once those 6 pencil marks were down, he was like, all right, I'm off to the races, and started inking. And Brad, I think that goes to your point, which is that the better you get, the more your marks will probably decrease as you get more confident to just dive into inking. Yeah.
Yeah. And it comes from confidence. And you'll know that when you get, you know, you feel confident at some point when you've been doing this at a certain number of hours, and you'll know when it's time to loosen those pencil sketches up a little bit. And it's probably going to come from nothing more than necessity, where you're sitting there going, oh my God, I've got other things going on. I've got to do this a little faster. What was that? I know that you shared this with me years ago on Webcomics Weekly, Dave. And I think it was an Al Capp quote. First you get good, then you get fast, then you get good and fast.
Yep. I love that quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's true.
Good and fast.
Good and fast. Yeah.
Is that that's German for what?
Good and fast is a type of eating that implies both joy and comfort.
Right. That's that's how you devour a Schrumpfwaffel.
Yeah, I'm feeling tremendous good and fast. Oh, this is a lovely meal. If it's not talking out of school, I'll rat on Jake, which is to say, I've seen you more and more as the years go on, you get basically an energy sketch rather than an accurate sketch. Mm-hmm. Your sketches become more about the feeling of the drawing, and it's kind of again and again and again over it. And then the line is implied, but it's not a strict rule, you know, the inking line of where it's going to go. And I'm impressed by that. That's actually where certain kinds of sketches of mine, you have reminded me to rely more on energy sketches than on realistic sketches. But talk about that for a minute. Why do you tend to go that way?
Well, and there's 4 stages of a drawing, right? So there's the gesture, which is just to figure out the energy. And sometimes you can just ink right over the gesture if you're confident with what you're drawing, right? But if, you know, if it's concept art and you're finding something and you're trying to figure out what this character is going to look like or what this pose is going to be, then there's the design stage. And that's where you figure out, okay, you know, does this monster have large horns or small horns? Is he bulky up the top or is he bulky down at the bottom, right? And then there's the volume, like structural stage. And that's when you go in and you figure out, okay, let's make sure that the chest doesn't feel, you know, like flat, two-dimensional, but that, you know, the clothing wraps around, it feels dimensional. And then finally, there's the rendering, and that's the ink line or the colored pencil or the marker or the watercolor, whatever it is you're rendering it with. And so as you work your way through those, you know, if it's something you're more confident and more comfortable doing, you could sort of eliminate 2 of those stages. You can go just from gesture to that final rendering. And so for, you know, if it's a character I've drawn 100 times, you know, I might not even have to gesture it. It's just sit down with the ink and draw Missile Mouse. You know, I could do that. And that honestly, like, you will get there someday if you deliberately practice this stuff and you focus on each one of those like stages and go through them and understand what you're doing, you'll get to the point where it just becomes such second nature to go directly to that more rendered thing and skip one of those middle stages.
Absolutely.
It's been fun to sit next to you over the years and to see how, and granted, these are convention sketches, so it's different than how you work at home in the studio, but it's been fun to see how I've literally seen as a friend, you get more confident as an artist and how you are able to eliminate stages. And it's fun to see how you can go straight from quick energy gesture sketches to a finished ink piece in an hour or so at a show. Maybe an hour's overshooting it, but one of your beautiful commission pieces. you're like, no, it's fine. Like I can do it in 20 minutes. 20 minutes is fine. I'm amazing. But it's been fun to see how you've been able to eliminate stages. And I think that's true for all of us as we broadly move forward in our careers, is that it's maybe that's actually the journey of every artist, is the removal of stages in your art, and maybe also the simplification of your communication. Well, that's me getting too deep on for a show about cartooning.
Well, listen, on that note, we need to thank Jake so much for spending an hour with us here on Comic Lab, especially an hour during Inktober, which is going on as we speak. And you can get your prompts over at inktober.com.
Absolutely. And you can also check out his broader work at mrjakeparker.com, or I failed to mention it earlier, his fantastic podcast, 3-Point Perspective, which that's goes right. up. What's the frequency on that, Jake?
Every 2 weeks.
Every two weeks
on a Wednesday. So 3-Point Perspective, it's focused on illustration. It's me and my two buddies, Will Terry and Lee White. And we just talk about illustration things. It's mostly craft. We talk a lot about craft, very little industry talk, but mostly like, here's what it's like to day to day be an illustrator. Here's how you deal with, you know, we talked about networking. We talk about how do you set up an art show booth or a convention booth? How do you negotiate a contract? Things like that. So check it out.
it's definitely worth a listen. Between Mr. Jake Parker, Inktober.com, and 3-Point Perspective, you are set for the next week for what you need to check out in art. And so thank you, Jake, for joining us this week. That has been fantastic having you. Only our second repeat guest, by the way, I think, Brad, right?
He's in a very rare place of breathing that rarefied air of a two-time repeat Comic Lab guest.
Category of one.
Yeah, you're like Paul Simon hosting SNL for the 15th time.
That's right.
You're in a rare group of folks. So thank you for that.
And, you know, just let us know if ever you guys want a guest over at your show, you know. In case it ever comes up.
Actually, I will say this: we thought about that. We're like, do we have Brad on?
We thought about that. You notice we haven't gotten the invitation, Dave. We thought about that. Cooler heads prevailed.
No.
You know what, Brad? No. I thought about inviting you to my birthday party. I thought about it. And then what I realized, Brad, is that I wanted to have fun on my birthday party. So
we wanted the podcast to be good. It's been deliberate not to have guests. We're 15 episodes in or 14 episodes in, and there's so much we just have to talk about. And I don't know, adding a guest complicates things too. You guys know that.
Oh yeah.
Just having me on today.
We definitely get it. I was just giving you a hard time, Jake, because you weren't accepting my trying to place you as number one Inktober guy. I had to get back at you somehow. Anyway, listen, do you hear that?
I do hear that.
Oh, I love that music.
That means you've been listening to, you know what that means. It means you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com. And if you're one of those people that's just now finding out about his Kickstarter, after you wipe the egg off of your face, you can now go over to drivekickstarter.com and pre-order the book that everybody's been talking about.
Oh, thank you. Well, and our guest today has been Jake Parker of MrJakeParker.com, Inktober.com, which you should definitely check out this month, and of 3-Point Perspective, the podcast. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this particular episode, like all our episodes, was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab.
Oh my gosh. Okay, what was your question again?
So my,
I honestly thought you were talking about
Jake
Brad.
Reading his email. Oh God, this is, here's Jake's internal monologue. He's buttering Geiger up again. I've got time for at least five questions about Sharpies.
Brad, it's just emails. Yes, yes, no, yes, no. Different inking emails.